The other end of the spectrum was that a 17-year-old girl got off a helicopter with a four-day-old baby.
Wow.
So there we were. Anyway, Jack Drummond and I knew that the South Vietnamese was coming out, and we were down there looking around, and then on the 29th of April, Saigon fell. And I don't know where the slide program is up there, but anyway, I'll just tell you how it was. When the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong overran Saigon, it was unbelievable. The South Vietnamese military was running, or Air Force was running to see if anything had any gas and just take off and go west. And so a lot of them landed on the roads. A lot of them helicopters landed in rice paddies in Thailand. Some of them made it all the way to Utapau. There was approximately 165 Vietnamese aircraft there. And those were F-5s, some of them nearly brand new, A-37s,
wow.
C-47s, AC-119s, O-1s, Hueys, etc. Well, Adderholt's plan was, he said, we're not leaving those airplanes there. And he was the art of the deal before the art of the deal, I'm just going to tell you. He was a real trooper, and if you have the chance to read his book, it'll be time well spent. So he sent Adderholt and I down to Utapau a little bit before the planes come out, and we were there when they were coming in. The B-52s had a 12,000-foot runway, and these planes coming in from Vietnam, they couldn't speak English. They didn't know anything other than they were needing a place to land, and we literally saw airplanes landing at both ends of the runway at the same time. C-47s coming in with an engine on fire. Another airplane landing and the gear just collapsing underneath it. Well, the SAC commander there, Colonel Austin, had a number of people there working for him, and he had them out there with trucks and tractors and all clearing the runway. So if you can imagine this place here and all these planes here, instead of being in a row and in order, were parked all different kind of ways, some no gear, some props bent, some wings bent up. That's the way it was, and it was just unbelievable. So when Jack Grumman and I got there, after all the A-1s had landed, we went down and tried to check them out. And we found out that they were sorting the airplanes, the U.S. was, into the type of airplane that was available. They had all the A-1s together and all the AC-119s, C-130s, etc. So the morning after they got through sorting, I took Jack back down in the porter, and we said, well, where are the A-1s? And so we got in a truck, and he took us way to the back of one of the runways where there was a taxiway. And in Utapau, it's very flat. It's right on the bay. So in order to build a runway and taxiways that would uphold a B-52 taxiing, they had to dig what we call in Texas some bar ditches. I mean, they had to dig some deep ditches and pound that dirt up. Well, they had parked all the A-1s in a row in the ditch, backed them off the taxiway in the ditch, in the grass. Two nights before we went down there to get them, it had started raining, and it rained every day in monsoon, and then it was sunshine, and it rained. So when Jack and I finally got out of the truck and we saw 11 A-1s, they were literally underwater above the tire. So you go here and you look at the tire up about halfway on the strut, that's how deep the water was that they were sitting in. And so I told Jack, I said, you know, we don't even know if these hydraulics are going to work, the brakes are going to work, or anything. So we had Chief Master Sergeant Day, and I think that was who it was. We asked him, said, can you get these things out of the water up here on the grass so we can look them over?
And he said, as far as you knew, were all of them flyable, or did you know?
Well, here was the good thing. They had just flown in. And when we got them out on the grass and we got up on the wing, started looking around, there's no checklist. There's no 781 manual talking about the condition of the airplane. The cockpits had been left open, and when I reached over into that cockpit of Nebby 606 and pressed down on the parachute seat cushion, the water came up between my fingers. So I told Jack, I said, we're not flying with this seat armed. We're leaving the pin in. So the ejection seat pin was right here at the base of the seat, so we flew those with no chance of getting out, which was fine. We left the canopies open.
Wait, that was fine?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, I don't know too many people that bailed out with wet silk and it opened up into a parachute, I put it that way. So We had a plan, and this was all fly by night. I hadn't flown the A1 for 3 years. Jack hadn't flown it for 5 or 6 years. So we're trying to put together in our mind the checklist of how to start the A1. And we started remembering over and over. I said, well, I remember we need to put the power on. We need to set the throttle about here for 1,000 RPM when it cranks up. We need the prop lever and the mixture lever up. And I said, we count 16 blades going across the nose. And after 16, it's pretty greased up. And we turn it on and go to both on the mags. And believe it or not, our memories were pretty close to correct. And they cranked up.
Or you wouldn't be here today.
Well, that's true. And there's a lot to that. We had gone over to base operations and told them, we're going to try to get in and turn the power on, see if we can find a radio that Jack and I can talk plane to plane on. And that we were going to try to get them out of there. And one thing to note about the whole deal of 200 or 300 airplanes sitting there from 3 or 4 different countries, only 4 airplanes were flown out of Utapau to safety. The rest of them were put on trucks or slung out or whatever. Those 4 airplanes were A1s. And 606 sitting here today is one of those 4 airplanes.
Wow.
So when Jack and I finally decide we're going to give it a shot, we said, we had one E-model there, 683. And I said, well, let's get in it and let's fly around just to kind of refresh ourselves. When we got on the wings and looked in the cockpit, there was no right seat and no right stick. So that ended that conversation. So I, being a captain and him and a major, I got to fly the fat face, a single seat, big one. And he got the 332, which was a single seater. We got in there and we turned on the radios and we talked and all. And we said, well, okay, let's give it a shot. And all we had done to that airplane was put oil in it and 115, 145 avgas. That was it. We walked around and walked around. We were literally looking for bullet holes or damage to the airplane that it might have happened when they were escaping from South Vietnam.
Because had they dragged these airplanes out of the water yet?
Yeah, they dragged them up on the grass, and we looked around and, you know, what can you say? The water drained out of the wheels and the brakes, and we were going to give it a shot no matter what. When Adderholt asks you to do something, you don't argue with that man. When he initially called me about flying the A1, I said, yes, sir, I'll do that. I said, you know, it's been 3 years. And he just said, young blood, you ever drive a bicycle? I said, yes, sir. Think you can do it again? I said, yes, sir. He said, get your ass down there and get them A1s. And that was the whole story, believe it or not.
That's leadership.
Well, I'm telling you, you go with that man anywhere. So we had walked around and pre-flighted as best we could. What we soon learned was there was no de-arming at the end of the runway when the Vietnamese landed. The guns were still hot. So I told Jack, keep your finger off the trigger. You know, it's an unbelievable situation to sit in an airplane you haven't flown for 3 years and crank it up and say, I'm going to just take it up and have some fun here. Well, it was unbelievable. But anyway, we told the tower we were going to taxi out that morning with 683 and 332. And we cranked them up, and we chose the call sign Sandy 1 and Sandy 2. And just what habit, as we got out on the taxiway and turned and we started taxiing towards the parallel taxiway, there was 2 Jolly Greens sitting over there waiting to rescue people with their engines running. So here, after all these years, was 2 A1s taxiing past 2 Jolly Greens, which was a little emotional.
Wow.
So we got to the end of the runway to arm, and we were going to take off north to south over the ocean just in case the engine quit or whatever. We could just ditch it in the ocean and try to get out. We had T-28 harnesses, but the coke fittings fit the harnesses in the A1, so we did that, and then we locked the seats and locked the harness so we couldn't fall forward, but the seat pin was in, so there was no ejecting, like I told you. So we got onto the runway, and I told Jack, I said, Jack, if you have to abort, just let it drive off of the end of the runway. If you get on the brakes and one of them hangs up, you're going to cartwheel, and we don't know what'll happen. So we agreed to that, and we didn't maximize the power on takeoff. They were clean birds, and so we got up at an adequate
Did you take off individually or together?
Yeah, Jack took off first. And so I was behind him, and I was looking at his airplane and kind of talking to him. He had selected half flaps on takeoff, and he got down about 2,000 foot, and he said, no flaps, no flaps, because it was coming on up and ready to roll. So he popped his flaps up, and I raised mine too. And about 3,000 foot or so, you could see him start to just touch a little left, right, and then all of a sudden he was airborne. And we were going to make for sure that we got up a little ways before he sucked the gear up. And he popped the gear, and I said, "The gear clean good, buddy. The gear clean good." So when he took off, we were going to exit back to the east over outside of Utapau and head up to Tok Lee. And he made a giant turn to the right to give me time. And I was going down, and I told him, I'm off. And I said, "Gear up." And so then he started his turn back to the left, and I joined up on his echelon to the left, and we turned out, and we flew at 1,000 feet. Some of the pictures are on these slides. I don't know where that show is. But I was up on his wing about 500 foot above him, taking pictures of him flying that Vietnamese A1-332 up to Tok Lee. Now, Adderholt had told us to take the airplanes to Tok Lee. And the reason being was there was a huge hangar that he had built himself or had built up there, and this is nothing confidential. I mean, it was to hide U-2s in there. If the U-2s had an engine problem and had to emergency land, they could land at Tok Lee and they could put them in a hangar. So he said, "I want you to put those A-1s in that hangar." So there's a slide here in a minute to show that we landed in the first H model 332. We turned over to the Thai colonel there at the base, and we just came down initial, just like we owned the place. We pitched out. We land, Sandy 1 on final, and Sandy 2 on final, and we touched down, taxied in, turned the keys over to that Thai colonel, and Adderholt had directed that an Army fixed-wing aircraft come up to Tok Lee and pick us up and take us back down to Utapau.